Welcome to season 8 of In the Moment, a podcast hosted by Anthony Mindel. This season, Anthony chats with actors, influencers, casting directors, and so many more in the entertainment industry. From AI to spirituality, conversations are cultivated about acting, art, life, and of course, finding ourselves in the moment. In today's episode, Anthony chats with talented actor and teacher, AMAW's own Francis Brennan Roper. The two cover important bases about self-work in order to achieve your best acting work, Francis's Buddhist practice, and finding inspiration in the face of lots of rejection.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of In the Moment podcast with my dear friend, guest, human extraordinaire, Francis Roper. This is also a very special podcast because we're doing a G&T podcast because she's a Brit. Well, you're American, but you're a Brit.
Sure.
Wait, you have American citizenship, don't you?
I have a green card.
Oh, shit. That's right.
Yeah.
But we're having a gin and tonic to celebrate her Britishness. I will not be doing accents all day for you because I suck at accents. Okay. Did you know my first professional play I did in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Cast out of New York City. And it was an Australian play called The Sum of Us.
Uh-huh.
And I had to do an Aussie accent.
Wait, didn't you call it your movie that?
I did.
That's crazy.
That was weird. Yeah.
That's really weird.
Yeah.
Your first play is what you made your first movie.
Yeah, docudrama about our work. Yeah.
Anyway, go back to the
play. No, just I had to do an Aussie accent. Aaron Nairclear. Anyway, hi.
Anyway, hi.
How's your G? Let's toast to the G's and T's out there. Gurgle, 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 gurgle. Okay. So you're on the podcast. What do you want to talk about?
What do you want to talk about?
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, wow. I knew you were going to do that.
How long have you been in LA? 10 years?
No, 12.
12
years. I
moved
in 2012.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I lived in New York first for 4 years. I graduated from my master's degree in London. And then I moved, ran away from that relationship.
as we often have to.
As we do, and we run away, 3,000 miles away. And then I lived in New York and I did a conservatory program so that I could stay in the States. I mean, it's so hard to try and move from one country to another.
That's true. It's even gotten harder, right? Post 9/11 and
that person that we won't talk about who lived in that place that's white.
Wait.
Donald Trump.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
Anyway, so it's been 12 years. It's insane that I've been here for 12 years.
It does go by very fast.
It really does.
I'm trying to think 2012. I don't even remember it. It's a blur.
I mean, it's definitely not a blur to me, but...
Really? I mean, I remember, moments of, but I don't... What is a year in my memory mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you remember,
I do. Weirdly, I think, it's interesting because I think when we were talking about doing this, we were talking about spirituality, and 2012 is the year that I started practicing Buddhism.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And because I moved to LA and I really was so lost and really dark. And I was like that when I met you, I remember the first time I did foundations and you go around, you ask people
what they think their thing is.
And I said something, some nonsensical thing. And you were like, I don't think that's what it is.
That's true.
And you had me pegged from day one.
It wasn't that, Francis.
No, it was not that. It was some shallow nonsense. Anyway, I remember years very distinctly because of my practice, I suppose, every year I'm always trying to transform something. And so each year, I think, has had aspects of transformation that are so stuck in my memory.
I get it's interesting. I mean, I'm older than you. So for me, I don't know. It's so also I'm a little obsessed with time. So my relationship, everything that I'm writing and everything that even this technique, and I'm obsessed with the moment.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so for me, when I look back, obviously I remember moments and recall specific, I remember you in class. I always remember you working with Corey, who reached out not too long ago and was like, I love you, man. And it was so great to hear from him. He's got a kid now.
He
sent me
a kid.
Yeah. He sent me a photo of his kid. He's doing well. He's working a lot commercially. But anyway, the scene you guys did of
View from the bridge.
Yes.
And you literally
I just
were
was
like
sit down, just sit down and say it. Just sit down and say it,
you
Francis.
You made me clutch my handbag.
That's right.
And I was like this. And you were like, don't move.
And it's been but anyway.
That was my first ever class
master class. That's right, your master class.
Yeah, I was terrified.
That's right. In the old space. Yeah, it's now a boxing gym.
Yeah.
I
drove past.
I know, it's crazy.
This is so weird.
To go.
I drove past it yesterday.
Oh, really?
Because I'm writing a short film. Well, I wrote a short film about an experience that I had. But I drove past the old space because I want to use like the old driveway.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I literally drove around there and took pictures and videos. And I was like, wow. I just spent so much of my life in this place.
I know.
It's so weird that we're doing this today because yesterday was such a retrospective day. It was really, I weirdly walked past the first place where I ever practiced Buddhism yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And then I went to the old space
stuff.
And like there really is a, I feel like this weird closing of a chapter is happening in my life.
Yeah, revisiting to let it go,
yeah,
say goodbye.
Yeah, it really is.
Don't carry it into a new beginning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I also, I guess, for instance, for me too, as I've gotten older, like, I don't even look at it by decades anymore because I just, you know, obviously science tells us our bodies are cellularly, are changing all the time. And I don't even feel like I'm the same person I was. I still identify with the 8-year-old in me, but then I also feel like, wow, that was another, it feels like a whole different person. My 20s feel like it was a different Tony.
Oh, me too. Same.
It's so strange.
When I met you.
Like a stranger, though.
Yes.
It doesn't even feel like me in a way.
But it wasn't, right?
But it was, but it wasn't.
Yes, but
I know,
it was,
that's
but it
weird.
Wasn't. Like,
I know.
Because I think about who I am now. I'm going to cry. Because of what this place has given to me. This space, you.
Oh,
you
well,
know?
Thank
no,
you.
I mean that. You know, like I was just talking to some foundation students, or they were auditing the other day, and somebody asked me what the greatest thing that I'd learned at the studio is. And to me, it's that I learned who I really am, and that I let go of all of these sort of artificial facade aspects of myself that really have been so in the way
stories,
of like, yeah,
concepts,
yeah, but
yeah.
Also that darkness and that heaviness and the stuff that I was carrying around that I was not letting go of, and I was like, I'm gonna take this baggage to my grave, you know. And I think I look back at my 20s and I think, who on earth was that person? I tell stories about things that I did and experiences that I had, and people are like, what? You know, don't you remember I told you about my like Colombian drug dealer who had no teeth? He was my only friend. And like, literally, I'm surprised. I should have died so many times, Tony.
But what's weird knowing you is I can see that part in you.
Yeah.
But it's also, you've so, but as you know, my philosophy, these things have made us who we are.
Oh,
like
you
wouldn't be here without it.
Yeah.
So we curse our past, but our past is absolutely essential, you know, who we are.
I feel like it gives me so much insight into, you know, not just what we do and the, you know, acting. To me, we talk about this sometimes, you know, acting is kind of like a shallow aspect of this thing that actually really creativity really is.
Yeah.
Which is so much deeper than that.
Yeah.
And so much more profound than that. And the more that I change or understand myself, I wouldn't have any access to be able to tell specific kinds of stories if I hadn't have had those experiences. I mean, not to say that you have to go through shit to like be able to tell story, but at some level, everything is about pain.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it is. And can we transcend that pain, and can we use it and turn it into something that creates value?
Transforming it into, you know, you always hear me say in class, if not for putting it into our art and transforming it, what is the point of suffering?
What is the point of suffering?
No, it's true.
Yes.
I mean, you put it into a practice of some sort.
Yeah.
Your meditation practice, a Buddhist practice, a chanting practice, a
yoga
practice.
Yeah.
You put it into your writing or your creating, or you just use it. It becomes the canvas.
Yeah.
I think we try to separate it because we have judgments about it. But also to your point, it's a good point about, it's like, I think because we live in such a business, if we think that acting isn't just about an audition, and so often it becomes about just the job and the meaning of that job.
Yeah.
And if you lose sight of like the whole artistic exploration of what it means to be a storyteller or a creator when it just becomes about the business. That's hard because we live
I texted you yesterday and I was like, I'm having a complete meltdown. I just have these moments sometimes where, you know, because I have a lot of trauma responses that, you know, are much better than they've ever been.
But
and the more that, you know, I do this, go to therapy and do EMDR and do internal family systems. And the more that I understand myself, the more I think, oh, wow, okay, this is why life is so complicated, because there are so many things going on inside of us. And I just had this moment yesterday where I went into a freeze response of, I just can't do it anymore. Like literally my whole body was like, I don't want to do the laundry. I don't want to clear up this mess. And it was just this moment of, I was so overwhelmed. And then I talked to my therapist about it. And, you know, she's so fabulous. And she said, well, are you talking about what's going on with you, with the people in your life? And I was like, no. You know, because everybody in my life is going through their own stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't take up space. You know, you just said this to me when I walked into the office. You were like, why did you walk into the office with your head down?
Yeah.
And so often I just don't take up space. And I think that is something that it's just really become profoundly obvious to me in the last few days that it's okay for me to book the job, need the job. You know, I do this thing sometimes, and I didn't really realize this, but I do this thing sometimes where I think I don't need it as much as somebody else does.
Uh-huh.
But it's a self-sabotaging martyrdom.
Uh-huh.
I think it really is. It's like I remember. Do you remember you gave me that lesson once where you said it's now okay for you to do this? It's now okay for you to do this.
That's right.
And I said I can't do it, Tony. And you were like, I can't. I can do it. And I remember. And it just makes me realize how difficult it is for me to receive.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of actors really struggle with that. A lot of
people can relate to that.
Really struggle with being able
relationship.
To receive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, look, I am in a relationship now that I am like, wow. You know, yesterday he was like, oh, I got you this thing for Valentine's Day. And I was like, what?
What?
And he literally was like, yeah. And then he wrote, I'm the best boyfriend you've ever had. Get used to it. And aww. I was like, but I used to just, and I just didn't think that I deserved that kind of love and support, you know? And I think it's the same with my career. It's like I have settled for scraps. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that it's hard, I think, to, especially because the business is the way that it is, to keep that sense of self and sense of like believing of in yourself and really believing that you're worthy of this thing when you hear no,
mm-hmm.
like 1,000 times. I mean, this, not to rag on Emma Stone, but yesterday, you know, my partner sent me this Emma Stone thing because he was trying to prop me up. And I was like, no, please stop coaching me. I can't handle it. But, you know, and then I went on and she's basically talking about how she heard no a lot. And I went online and I was like, okay, well, how many years did she hear no for? From the time she moved to wherever to LA and then to get her first job. And it was 3 years. And I think about 12 years of being in LA and I'm like, that's a lot of no. And it's been really painful.
Yeah.
It's been really painful. And I think it, you know, sometimes it's really hard to continually believe that you deserve this thing when it hasn't shown up in your life in the way that you want it to. And I think you said this to me the other day. You were like, I don't know how you don't give up. That Frances, she doesn't give up, you know? But it's true. I have a very stubborn, tenacious personality.
Well, I think that's part of it, though, Frances, is that, listen, we can't, and I know you're not, but like everybody has a different journey and hers... You know, I know, but I think it's important for the listeners to always remember that we have to just, I think why your life is opening up is because you're also allowing space for those things that maybe the 12-year path was essential for you to finally discover that, wait a minute, why am I not making room on my pedestal here for a trophy and an award and a huge amount of money and an amazing boyfriend and a trip to Hawaii? And maybe that's been part of the journey. Yeah. You and I are similar in that regard, yeah, in terms of like the things that I'm working on and accepting, like, you know what, I'm good enough. Like, maybe that's part of our own unfolding.
Is.
Whereas somebody else, it only takes them a year and a half.
Yes.
And that's okay.
Yes.
Then she or he or them, they have different deficiencies, isn't the right word, but they have different areas of their life that they're having to work on.
1,000%.
Also, Frances, if I could just jump into, yeah, I think it's always important too, is I get it. The feedback loop that actors are trained to respond to is I go out for an audition, I get great feedback, I get a producer session, I book the job.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that circuitry doesn't ignite, then all of a sudden the feedback loop is out of whack.
Yeah.
And what do we have to confirm that we have talent?
Yeah.
But I think that's, first of all, it's always been an antiquated system, mm-hmm, because the best person doesn't get the job,
mm-hmm,
most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And now because of just the interface of so many different aspects of our business,
mm-hmm,
it's even less so.
Yeah.
And I think though we're living in an amazing time now too, where we can define more of what success and validation and achievement looks like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I know you're also, this is why you're an amazing teacher and your acting is completely exploded and elevated, because you're kind of doing it for the right reasons now. That's a hard thing to get.
I literally just said this to my partner yesterday, because I told you, he's making this movie in Hawaii, and you know, we were talking about the why of something, you know, and I said, the truth is that if you're doing it for the wrong reasons, you will never get the result that you really want, because it won't be rewarding. It won't be. And also, if we do it for me, not for him, but for me, my why for being an actor for a really, really long time was to prove people wrong,
mm,
and was to be like, fuck you to people.
Right.
That was really it. Mm-hmm. You know, beep, shouldn't have
sworn. No.
But
I swear all the time on here. Okay. I have a book called Book the Fucking Job.
Okay, great. But that for such a long time, because I had an ex-boyfriend who became a movie star, and you know, that was rough, you know, driving down Sunset and looking
seeing
at somebody
billboards
that you like loved,
yeah,
on a giant billboard when you're trying to run away from them. It's really hard to overcome,
uh-huh,
you know? And there was a lot of hate and anger in my pursuit of my career.
Ah, so interesting.
And
you know, can I just jump,
yeah,
in? Because we've never maybe talked about that part of it, because when you just said that, when I first moved to LA, I had done a movie in New York with a guy who became, he's very well known now.
Yeah.
And I was a little judgy on set with him, because I just thought he was okay.
Yeah.
I've since come to really like his work, but because he's grown and he's evolved. But
yeah,
in this movie, it was a shit movie anyway. But like, you know, it was just like, okay. And then I remember coming to LA and seeing, then he broke through on a huge movie. I don't remember what it was now. And he was on a billboard. And
yeah,
I remember calling my best friend who was back in New York at the time. And she's like, you know, you're bringing the same kind of like, you've moved to LA, but you're bringing the same kind of energy.
Wherever you go, there you
that's
are.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
To your circumstances. And that was a wake up call for me.
Yeah.
And you know, to the listeners, it doesn't mean we don't have like a nemesis.
Of course,
or
I have seven nemeses. Is that even a
or
word?
Or have a be a little bit slightly jealous,
yes,
of someone. I think that's all okay when we can acknowledge it. And then also, there's room for everyone. And also, somebody else's success shows us, well, I can be successful.
And what you want.
Absolutely.
Right? The truth is, when I suddenly was like, oh, the reason I'm jealous of this person is because they have this thing that I want to be doing.
That's right.
And so it actually clarifies your own dream.
Yeah.
If you can look at it that way. And I think I never used to be able to do that for myself, because I just, you know why I couldn't do it? It's because I didn't believe that it would ever happen for me.
That's right.
And so the anger and the jealousy was just like, it just sat there because it couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah. I think we underestimate, we've talked about belief. I really do think it's belief
it's
moves mountains. And again,
it's everything.
To the listeners who are like, well, I don't know if I believe. it's for me, it has been a long ass journey, and I'm maybe getting there now. Yeah. Where I'm like, whoa, I really believe it's going to happen. And then things have started to happen.
Yeah, same.
It is really belief.
It is.
And that doesn't mean you won't have doubts still. Yes. It doesn't mean all this stuff won't come rushing in that you're like, oh my God, I got to quit this fucking shit show business. You know what I mean? But then you're like, actually, no, this is going to happen.
But if you, I think that this is a really important thing that I teach about a lot. And I think it's really hard for people to comprehend, because it means that you have to do the work on yourself to actually transform these things that are preventing you from having the thing that you want.
That's right.
But, and most people don't want to do that work, unfortunately, yeah. Right? Yes.
That's exactly it. It's, you know, those things are symptomatic of what gets in the way of the belief.
Yes.
Because you feel like shit about yourself. You're unworthy. You're undeserving. Yes. You're a loser, an asshole.
Yes.
We can fill in the blank, right? And there's some of them are quite unconscious. Some of them are conscious and loud. Some of them take forms that we don't even realize are getting in the way of the belief.
Yes. Yeah. It's so, complex.
I know. You have to unearth, you have to unroot them from the root.
You know this about me because we've talked about it so much. In 2021, after the pandemic, well, not after, because we were still in the middle of it, but I remember looking at my last partner and just being like, I'm so unhappy. Mm. And this tape that had been playing in my mind for 30
as good as you get.
6 years was like, you are a piece of shit.
Right.
That was the tape.
Uh-huh.
And I had never been able to change this. And at a certain point, you're like, I'm depressed because this is how I talk to myself.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And it wasn't until I really went to therapy and I did a lot of trauma work. And trauma, you know, I think it's important to say that it doesn't have to be a huge thing. It doesn't have to be this monumental thing that happened in your life. It could be literally someone telling you that it's never going to happen for
you. Right, right.
It could be one person.
Right, right.
You know?
An agent denying or saying
Yeah, or like a teacher being like, you're a bit dumb.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happened to me.
Yeah.
And I think the more that I started to actually look at these things that had caused me so much unhappiness and so much suffering, because these were things that I believed about myself to be true, but they were not the perception of me that you had.
No, of course.
But they were the perception I had of myself.
Yourself. It's the mirror.
And actually, truly, I think things start to change when your perception of self changes.
Yeah.
When you think, I deserve better.
Yeah.
I am talented.
Yeah.
Actually, I should be a series regular.
That's
Why can't I make my fucking movie?
That's right.
Why don't I have the money to make my movie? You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
And it took me a really long time to actually be brave enough to confront the fact that I was keeping myself stuck. It took a long time because I wanted to blame everybody
else. Of course, self-victimization is, which we all do at some level. I know.
Really wanted to be that.
Yeah.
And be like, it was his fault.
Right.
He became a movie star and I didn't.
Right.
And but why? Why is that? Why can two people be at the exact same moment in life and one goes one way and one goes the other?
Mm-hmm.
But my journey was about, his journey was that thing. And my journey was about discovering who I really am and doing so much of this work on myself that actually when my life does explode in that way, that I really think I'll be able to create a tremendous amount of value with all of the things that I experienced.
Well, you already are.
Yeah.
You don't need that to create value because you are.
No,
every,
I know.
You know what I mean? Every day in the classroom teaching here.
But, I mean, so many of my students this week have texted me and told me that they book jobs all over the world. So exciting.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah.
But also I think to your point, like he's also on that journey. It's just sometimes people aren't.
His way is just
different. And then sometimes people aren't conscious of it or don't want to unearth. I'm not saying him in particular. Yeah. I'm just using like, if I think of certain political, you know, politicians, like some people are not on, everybody's on this journey.
Yeah.
We're all on it. It just sometimes takes.
Well, and you don't know what you need in order to change.
That's right.
And so what that person needs is going to be completely different. I needed to hit rock bottom and struggle and suffer. That was my way that I changed. But somebody else might be, I'm so famous and successful and have tons of money and I'm still miserable as fuck, you know? Like, we don't know what the thing is, what the catalyst will be to change our lives, really.
Well, this is an interesting point because this is what's hard about being a teacher, because a teacher has insight. Some of us have psychic powers.
Oh, my goodness.
But some of us have, good teachers have insight and intuition about what it is the person does need, but what's fucking hard about teaching is people don't often want to meet that at that juncture. And if they're lucky, they may get it. They may get it in the moment, or they may get it 10 years from now, or they may never get it. Yeah. That's what's hard about teaching.
It is.
Because we're sitting at, it's like what you said about how I saw you. I never saw you with those things of how you saw yourself.
I know.
When I share with you my stuff, you don't see that in me. And so, but a good teacher brings that up, but that can be very inflammatory for the student.
Oh, 1,000.
How do you work through that as a teacher?
Well, people either love me or they hate me.
Yeah, I know. It's very polarizing.
So polarizing. Well, because you trained me.
Well, it's good. You don't want to be their friend in that regard.
No, you can't be their,
You know, the Dalai Lama says, a great teacher is the enemy. And that's always been something that I've abided by.
I mean, I hated you for a while.
I know. But I've said that in class. The great teacher, I'm not saying I'm great. I don't mean it that way. But
you are a great teacher.
Well, thank you. But as I just said that, I was like, I just mean, I have always loved that sentiment because a really insightful teacher, a teacher who's really understands the human condition or whether it's a therapist or a parent, whoever our teachers are, they really are the enemy because they bring, my mom is the fucking enemy. I love her. They're here right now. I'm going to be teaching parent stories next week. But she brings up the stuff in me that.
Well, because she's a mirror.
I know.
Of course.
So of course I like.
Yes, because she constantly we're being shown the parts of ourselves that we don't want to look at.
I know.
And that's why relationships
partners are hard. I was going to say relationships, yes, teachers.
Yes. And you know, I think the way that I work through that, most of the time, I think people, even if they can't receive it in the moment,
they go home. Yeah, it's like raindrops.
And, you know, like often I had a student a while ago who, so angry at me. You know, I said something that was so accurate. Sometimes I channel things and I'm like, I don't know where this is coming
from.
It's just, you know, and I said this thing and it was so accurate as to what the thing in his work was that was not working. And I remember driving away and like he was standing on the street and he was bitching about me to one of the other students in class. And I was like, okay, you know, it is what it is. And then about 3 weeks later, he came back and he was like, you were right. And he had sat with this thing that I said, you know, it's not about me. It's just in the moment what is being revealed, right? It's just, we become a channel for information and it's whether or not someone can receive it or not.
Yeah.
I think that was such a beautiful moment for him to realize that like his aggression that he felt towards me was actually like anger that his inner child was feeling towards himself, that he was doing this thing to himself that made him suffer all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember what it was now. It was that he always wanted to have the last word with me instead of just receiving and letting me give him something for him to take away as opposed to us having an intellectual conversation about it. And because that was the way that he sort of bypassed doing the actual work that I was asking him to do. And when he got it, he got it. And then his work completely changed.
I think it's interesting being a teacher today now too, because it's sometimes the battle is against results orientedness in our industry. You know, it's becoming more and more, I think, like utilitarian, uniform and a certain way. And I've railed against the homogeneity of it all, you know, but I think like the exchange of information in a space that's creative is so cool. If we lose that. Also, I think we are losing that in culture in terms of the political stage, right? Not being, I had an epiphany. You're the first person I'm sharing it with, besides Howan, maybe.
And but this everybody is a, that's going to listen to this podcast.
But here's the thing, and I'm still trying to work through it because there's policies and legislation that I am absolutely against that are anti-social justice or anti-immigration or anti-environmental or you know what I mean? And so what I've had an epiphany about, because, you know, I can be very political and I think art is political.
Of course it is.
But because I'm really helpful, I think, in helping the actor be non-judgmental about characters that they play and holding empathetic space for themselves as these people. And that's why the work is honest and people go to those places. I've realized like maybe, you know, the last few years, my judgment of certain political constituencies, I had this thought that, okay, if I were born in, if I'm looking opposite myself, somebody mm-hmm. who has completely different views than I do, but if I were born where they were born in the same circumstances, in the same environment, with the same teachings and the mm-hmm. same socioeconomic class or whatever, mm-hmm. I might very well have their beliefs mm-hmm. in religion or climate mm-hmm. or politics. Mm-hmm. And so it's, I don't know, I just had a weird, I was like, well, gosh, I'm really great at teaching empathy in class for us not judging characters, but I really feel like part of the cultural divide and divisiveness that has occurred has been, I think, because we're not able to exercise empathy.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean I have to agree with your point of view.
No, but you have to be able to have a dialogue about
well,
it.
Well, we've lost that.
Of course.
But so I just, for me, in my own personal journey of like, you know, I have to get back to that place of, but then this is also scary because of like the mob. It also, maybe people mistake that for being passive or you're not taking a position on stuff and you get trolled for that. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Or that you sympathize, you know, I think that that's a lot of what happens in war, right? When people are like, well, it's what they're doing, you know, and I think that that's what we're seeing so much of right now.
Today's podcast episode is sponsored by We Audition. Receive 25% off with the promo code AMAW on weaudition.com. The video chat community to audition, rehearse, self-tape, and get advice, and hopefully book the fucking job.
Enjoying In the Moment? Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and follow us at Anthony Mindel and at AMAW Studios, plus all the worldwide accounts near you for updates.
I really believe, you know this, right? This is the tale as old as time. You can't have light without dark.
Right.
We can't find enlightenment without challenge or struggle. You always talk about a lotus flower being blossoming from
the mud.
You know, and I really think the truth is that somebody who believes something completely different from me, if I try and enlighten them with my perspective, they won't listen to me. But if somebody with their own perspective was able to have that dialogue, because we assimilate with people who are similar to us, right? You and I are such good friends because we think really similarly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think every single person has a mission that they are supposed to fulfill, no matter who they are. And even if they do really, really bad things, I still believe that I felt this way about Donald Trump becoming president, because even though it was terrible, it also brought to the surface
so many things that were existing already. That's right.
There was so much poison existing in people's hearts that without that
systems,
man. So actually, you know, there's this Buddhist concept of poison and medicine, right? Everything can either be medicine or everything can be poison, and it will be determined by the end of your life. So do you turn everything that was poisonous into medicine and use everything to create value? Or does everything in your, even the medicine that you drink, is it still going to become poison if you ultimately don't treat people with respect, treat yourself with respect, become a person who creates value and unity in your environment? Everything can be either.
That's right.
You know?
Well, and it's both in a way, right? That's the beautiful dichotomy of it. That reminds me of that, also a Buddhist saying. I'm going to kind of make up my own version of it, but there was a Buddhist philosophy. I'll just do my own version of it, but you'll get the gist.
Yeah.
So there was a poor farmer who had a son, and all of a sudden they got a horse, and one of the towns, I don't know, a horse just showed up at their farm or something. That's my version of it. And one of the townspeople came by and they said, oh, you are so fortunate. You're so lucky. And the farmer said, well, who knows? We don't know what's good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day the son got on the horse. Mm-hmm. The horse bucked the son. And the son fell off and broke his leg. And the townsperson came by again. Oh, gosh, you're so unlucky. And the dad said, well, who knows what's good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next day, the conscriptors, because there was a war mm-hmm. about to begin
mm-hmm.
in, you know, the country. And the conscriptor came by and saw that the son's leg was broken and could not conscript him to the war. And the townsperson came by and again said, oh my gosh, you're so lucky. And the farmer, of course, said, who knows what's good or bad. And that is kind of this, what you're talking about, the ongoing undulation of life shows us, right? But yeah. It's also very difficult to hold that very Buddhist, delicate and nuanced understanding in a world that is so reactionary now. To not react is provocative.
Yeah.
To let things unfold. You know, a lot of times when I look at, like, you know, acting is the art of reacting without thinking. That's what makes it exciting and impulsive. But in life, when I've had a reaction to something without letting it undulate and unfold, it's always kind of blown up in my face. And that's the lesson.
But this is so beautiful. This is because the truth is, and it goes back to this idea of us talking about 12 years, right? Or not 12, whatever, that everything actually has unfolded exactly as it was meant to.
That's right.
For my greatest happiness.
That's right.
Not what I thought, not what my ego thought would make me happy, but what I have had to be faced with in my life in order to do whatever transformation internally I needed to do in order to become a happier, more stable, more reliable, responsible person who I used to be so reactionary. Mm. I was so like, you know, I literally was like, and I said this to my therapist once. I was like, it's like when I go inside my mind, I see this cat and it's in a cage and it's like, you open the box and it's like, you know? And the truth is that that's just a scared little girl inside of me who was attacked a lot and who felt really abused and unsafe.
Yeah.
And that's why we become that way. I really think that this is kind of what I love about Buddhism is that everything is unfolding exactly in the rhythm of life that it's supposed to in order for us to have whatever experiences we're supposed to have while we're on this planet. And I just think that we don't trust that. I don't trust that. Half the time I'm like, I want this job and don't get this job. And then you're upset about it and whatever. But the truth is, when I just trust my life, that my life is unfolding the way that it's supposed to, and that it will move in the direction that it's supposed to, when there's no resistance, everything is easy.
What's the saying? There's more tears are shed over answered prayers than none.
Yes.
If you think about it, God, I really want to date him. I really want to date him. And then you date him and you're in love and then you break up and their tears are shed. And so the listeners are like, well, what's the point then? But I think for me, the prayer has become, I'm like, brah, come on now. I need the money for this movie now.
Yes.
So, yes.
But that's okay.
Yes, that is okay. But mostly the prayer or the mantra is for the highest benefit
of all, what's
the highest manifestation of this?
Where everyone wins.
That's right.
Not one person is winning.
It's not so much about...
You know, I was talking about this morning with one of my girlfriends who is an actress, and I practice Buddhism with her. And we were talking about our mentor who passed away last year. And she said, you know, his what he hoped for was for humanistic competition.
Mm.
And his definition of that was who can become the happiest.
Mm.
And if we could all strive to live our life. What a great
competition.
Right?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
But that was his goal in his 97 years of life. Competition for
happiness.
Was can we all... But that means getting all your dreams.
Right.
Achieving all your goals and being happy and feeling fulfilled and having beautiful relationships, all those things.
But Francis, I also think it's like the real truth is we are also mostly happy when other people that we love also achieve that.
Of course, because we can't do it by ourselves.
I know, but that's the capitalist competitive system that we're all living in is what, well, as you mentioned earlier, a lot of people have all the things that we wish we had, but they're still miserable and unhappy.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of science that proves, like, you know, that cohort, and I'm just not even talking about our business. I'm talking about across, you know, all lines of work and all kinds of levels of success. It still does not generate the kind of happiness you think it's that's
gonna,
intrinsic.
You think that it's going to
solve your problems, fulfill
some kind of void. It does for a bit. Yes.
And then
course.
You're like, well, that party is ended.
But then you get this new car and then you're like, why did my car break down?
I know.
Then you get the boyfriend. You're like, why does he have so many problems? You know, like, or you get yes. the, you know, you
that's, you're like, God dang it. Why?
Do it's I, just yeah. relative happiness, right? Yeah. It's not.
Also, there's been some, I've talked about this in class years ago, but there is something called the happiness set point that even if you, let's say you got billions of dollars, well, this is two different theories, but let's say you got a lot of stuff that you wanted, after a while, you default back to the basic stasis of where your happiness set point is.
Of course.
And so, but the good thing about that is we can generate a higher happiness stasis mm-hmm. with some sort of practice that makes our joy dependent only on ourselves. Yeah. Then that can rise. So that was the first thing. Mm-hmm. And then also I thought it was interesting. Does that make sense
yeah.
for the listeners? Yeah. Then the second thing is I heard something about like people who have billions of dollars, like you think, this is how human beings have been trained. We think, well, if I had millions of dollars, I would be set. I would be happy. I'd have everything. I'd pay my bills. Actually, billionaires are just as neurotic and obsessed and scared and freaked out.
Yeah.
About paying bills and are they going to have enough and what happens if they get sick and how are they going to blah, 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 blah. They're just different toys and different levels of whatever, but they have the same concerns as somebody who has $100 in their checking account.
But that's because this is the human condition of the things that we battle with, right? And well, I think what we're talking about is that unless you actually fundamentally address those things that make you unhappy, the fear, the doubt, the panic, the anger, the resentment, the bitterness, the inability to see somebody else's point of view, unless we actually work on those parts of ourselves and, like you just said, have some kind of, whether it's meditating or, you know, I chant every day, having some kind of practice that helps you bring yourself back to self, because ultimately you are the only person that can help you be happy. I mean, yeah. there's nobody else, nobody telling you that you're the most beautiful, talented, awesome, sexy person
That's
on the
right.
planet. It doesn't matter if somebody tells you that, but if you don't believe it, if you don't see yourself that way, if you don't perceive yourself as something that you feel loved and fulfilled by,
or even not even just in the love quadrant, like looking at like getting a job and you're like, oh my God, I finally got the validation that I'm a really good actor. And then you're on set and you're like, I really suck.
Yeah.
Or then you see the movie and you're like, oh my God.
Or you get cut out.
Yeah. Or you're in it, but you're like, okay, great. And then you go back to season two. And then by season two, you hate it. And you know, it's traps everywhere.
And, right. Like this is the conversation I was having yesterday about, well, if I do this thing, if I make this movie, then my whole life will change.
Right.
And I was like, rah!
Yeah. No.
You know,
yeah,
like,
that's dangerous.
Because then we, and I was talking about this, you know, I was up for that job on that show, you know, that got nominated for a lot of Emmys. And I had spent all that money before I got that job, you know, and I didn't get the job. And I was sharing this yesterday that when I didn't get that job, after really thinking that I was going to for a long time, that I just wanted to die. And I really felt like, what is the purpose of my life if I can't achieve this thing? And that was such a turning point for me. And actually, I really believe that I didn't get that job because this was something that I needed to learn.
Mm-hmm.
That my life is not equivalent to a job.
Mm-hmm.
My life is exponentially more important than booking a fucking acting job. I cannot base my happiness or my worth or my value on something that is material.
Well, also, I think we have an unhealthy, and again, I've never been a pilot or an airline flight attendant.
No,
a pilot. I'm trying to think of, because, you know, I travel a lot. So like trying to think of travel industry, I'm not in another business. I've never been a doctor or whatever. So I'm sure there's like hierarchical things in those careers, in those businesses, just like in ours. But I think ours is so hyper focused on the tangible, visible part of it.
Yeah.
Which is distorted.
Because that is the only way that people are perceived as having
correct,
value.
Correct, because success, that's right. Those businesses may be very similar in the sense that entertainment, in a weird way, even though it's global and it's everywhere, it's also actually quite niche.
Mm.
But it's so hyper-focused that it feels like the epicenter of our being.
Yeah.
But all you got to do is go to blah, 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 They don't know bum fuck about anything about any actor anywhere. A friend of mine is an executive for a very famous actor. And my dad today asked her, who is that? So that goes to show you, yeah, it means nothing. Although it means everything when you're in it, but it means nothing, but it means everything, but it means nothing. So we just can't get caught up in it.
Yeah.
We just, which my last point, Francis, is coming back to, to have a sanctuary, to have a training that is about the process, because life is process. I am 56 now, never been 56 before. I'm talking to my parents who just got into town. I'm going to totally start crying. They're 89. They're doing amazing. I'm crying out of love, not like, but although I do see like their finish line maybe sometimes, but my mom was saying, she's like, Tony, you've never been 56, but you're 56 now. And you haven't ever been 89, and I've never been 89 until now. And there are things that we're going to learn and you're going to discover when you are that, that you can't, you aren't now. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the thing, is life is in process. So we have to, there is a joy and a struggle and a beauty and a, that's life itself. So why, when we can immerse ourselves in that acting, that is the real joy, you know, that. That's the only reason why I think we are really acting.
Yeah.
If we can get attuned to that. People think it's about, oh my gosh, I'm on a show and everybody's seeing my face and I'm on a billboard and the red carpet and I have billions of followers. That is so, it's so superficial. I don't mean it's fake. I just mean it's at the
it is literally the tip of the iceberg.
The tip of it, yes. Mm-hmm. It's not even the subterranean part. Two-thirds of an iceberg is underwater.
Yes.
So they don't, that, and that doesn't, that's going to, sadly, with climate change, that one-third is melted away. Ooh, this is good. I'm going to use this for a lecture. It's gone. That opening night is gone. It's not repeatable. It's not a real thing, but a process of uncovering self. Everything that you've been talking about, Francis, is so inspiring because you've been doing it and you've evolved. That's why you're an incredible teacher of it.
I mean, I...
And also you don't take it too seriously, even though you talk about... Because it's the other thing. We can get... It's sad and upsetting and painful, but it's also beautiful and funny and weird,
yes,
and a cosmic joke.
Yes, and it can be all those things.
All of it.
It can be all those things. And I think, you know, I think that we all want the superficial part of it because it means that you did it.
Yeah. And other people see that,
right,
we did it.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you know what I said?
They don't care.
I had this, this is brilliant. So you know that.
They don't care.
You know this, remember that class that I told you that I taught? I said to someone, you know, I was reading a section of The Artist's Way to them about, you know, how hard it is when you don't get the recognition that you
feel
want
like you
or deserve.
Yeah.
And one of the actors in class said to me, well, I just feel like I don't have anything to show for it. And I said, that's not true. You have you.
Mm.
And it's true.
It's beautiful.
That's
enough.
Proof.
That's it.
That's your proof that you.
Wow.
Yeah. Right. And I was like, that's it.
Also, Francis, like even when we're talking about this, it's true. When I was whispering, nobody cares, because we don't. You are achieving and succeeding and doing things. But when you send me something that's really great that you're in or you've done or you've written or produced or whatever, I'm going to enjoy it and celebrate it. But I'm not looking at it through the lens that you are.
No.
I'm just like, oh, that's so awesome. And then I'm moving on to the next thing because I'm like, I got to get my thing done. We see it through our own prism.
Yeah.
And it's so weird that we think everybody is tracking our success. Nobody cares.
Well, and also your perception of me hasn't changed from the moment that you saw that thing.
Right.
Or before it or afterwards.
That's
because,
right.
Because your perception of me is based on so many different
That's
things.
That's right. And somebody else's perception of you might just be based on seeing that,
right,
one thing,
right,
for 1 minute,
right,
which is,
right,
also untrue, which also then opens up this thing. Nobody really knows who the kaleidoscope of who we all really are,
yeah,
because nobody can, even a lover, we can never know. That's what I love about love in a way. I'm never going to know, like, I can never know someone fully. I can never know my parents fully. They can never know me to the degree, even though it's intimate and it's loving and it's, we can never,
no,
we can only know ourselves. And even that is like an ongoing journey of discovery.
This is maybe not encouraging, but one of the most.
Let's end on a high note, but
no,
go there, Francis.
But,
go
but
there.
No, but one no, of no, the okay. most encouraging things I ever read from my Buddhist practice was when you walk into darkness, as in when you pass away from this existence, who will come to encourage you?
Mm.
And the idea is that it will just be you.
Mm.
Because you are all you will ever have throughout existence, and people come and go. And I was talking about this in class today. Like, we're so attached. The reason we don't look at the things that feel painful is because we're so attached to permanence. We're so attached to, I'm going to have this thing forever. No, you're not.
Right.
That is not true.
Right.
Things fall apart all the time.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you make $1 billion, you lose
right.
them.
Right.
You get an amazing job, right. people it's hate gone. You.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, like, nothing is permanent.
Yeah.
And I think because of that, we think when I get to this milestone or when I get to this thing, that I'll be better or happier or whatever. But the truth is that thing will end. The job will end, the relationship will end. And not to say that, not in a depressing way.
No, no, no.
In a,
absolutely.
These people show up in our lives. I didn't know you 12 years ago. And now look, I get this wonderful, beautiful human in my life that I love dearly.
Oh, I love you too.
Right? And, yeah. and you know, in 10 years, we might not talk
right.
to each other,
that's
right?
I know, that
because,
also happens.
Because our mission together might
that's
be
right,
over.
Be done.
You know, and like,
you're right.
And it was so hard for me to accept at the end of my last relationship that, that our mission together was done.
Over.
It was so hard.
It's painful.
But it really yeah. taught me that people come, you know, I hate that saying that like.
Reason,
come
season,
for,
lifetime.
No, I know, but like, you know, please, I'm going to throw up. But but at the same
but
time.
It's kind of true.
It's so true.
I know.
And I think we're so attached to the idea that things will always stay the same and they won't.
We know change is so hard for people, right? It's so scary.
It's the only thing in life.
I know,
that
but
is
it is the only constant.
Inevitable.
I know. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. now I think it's disrupting more and more at a quicker pace than we've ever seen, which
yeah.
is, it brings up its own
fear. Which
is fear.
Why everyone has
I know, everybody's
existential
in constant.
All the
yeah,
time.
That's right. That's right.
AI!
But I know. Do love that too, Francis, what you said. Like, yeah, when we move on to the next phase of, you know, from this time, you just have your soul. That's it. Your soul.
Oh no, I'm gonna cry.
But you know, I know it's beautiful. I didn't find that depressing,
no,
or I find
so
it really
moving.
Encouraging
it's
and moving.
So
it's
moving.
Beautiful. It's like this talk. I think this is like, I don't know what should be our inaugural season 8 podcast, because I just had Rahul on and we talked about TikTok and like a whole different kind of mindset around that. And now we're going deep. Okay, let's do the speed round.
Okay.
This was really inspiring. What's your favorite movie of all time, or just a movie you like?
Okay, this is going to sound really lame, but The Horse Whisperer.
I don't think I ever saw it.
I know, most
Wait.
People haven't.
Whoa.
Robert Redford directed it. It's
oh.
with Kristin Scott Thomas.
Yeah, I never saw it.
It was Scarlett Johansson's first movie.
Wow.
It's
okay,
so,
I'll have to watch it.
You have to watch it.
Okay.
It is fantastic.
The Horse Whisperer.
Yeah.
Got it. I'll put it in movie night.
It's just so moving. You are going to cry like a baby.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Also, Robert Redford is fucking hot in it.
He was amazing in the day. Yeah.
Yes.
He was. He,
and he directed
some
it.
Incredible
He's
performances.
Really, yeah. yeah.
Ooh, who's your celebrity crush?
Oh, God.
Male or female, doesn't matter.
Oh,
it can be.
I've probably dated them. I'm just kidding.
Just it could be somebody whose work you aspire to or inspire by.
Who, okay, who, ooh, honestly, someone like Rachel Morgan. I know that's, you know, that's,
no,
she's not
she's
celebrity.
Gonna, we'll make sure she hears this
but
podcast.
But like, you know, I watch people's work from this studio.
She's
and I
inspiring.
Think these people, their work is so beautiful that
yeah,
it
she's
blows
a badass.
Your mind.
Yeah. yeah. What's something you can't do without?
My Buddhist practice.
Beautiful. What would you tell your younger self?
It's going to be okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, how would you describe acting in one word?
Truth.
What's something that scares you?
Not becoming happy.
What's something AMAW has taught you or something you've learned here at the school?
Everything about myself that I didn't know before I came here.
I thought you were going to say everything everywhere all at once.
Well, I mean, that's
yeah.
basically
I
true.
It kind of is yeah. cosmic. And how would you define love?
Two people sharing a moment where you look at somebody else and you think, I'm really grateful
you.
That you exist
Aww.
In my life. I
Me
really
too.
Feel that way about you.
Oh, thanks, Frances. Well, you kind of summed up my saying always is, my definition of love is just this moment right now.
It is.
Yeah, beautiful. Frances, that was such a great talk. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having
Where
me.
Can people find you on the gram or TikTok?
Oh, goodness. I don't have TikTok.
I know,
and I
know.
Will never, ever.
I know.
This will, it will never become a part of my life.
Cut to next year. Hey, everybody.
Here's
this is my TikTok page.
Here's my ass. No, I'm just kidding. No, thank you. Yeah, my it's just my full name, Frances Brennan Roper.
And they can come see you teach at the studio every week.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Frances.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to In the Moment. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe, and follow us at Anthony Mindel and at AMAW Studios, plus all the worldwide accounts near you for more.
Today's podcast episode is sponsored by We Audition. Receive 25% off with the promo code AMAW on weaudition.com. The video chat community to audition, rehearse, self-tape, and get advice, and hopefully book the fucking job.
Oh, that was so beautiful.
That was great. Frances, that was an amazing conversation.